welcome to another episode of Sacred Cinema here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, for the next half hour, and this week's episode is entitled Trouble in Paradise. To seeing Infinity Pool, the new movie directed by Brandon Cronenberg. Obviously, there was a lot of hype for it, and I really enjoyed it. It was certainly up my alley. Lots of interesting images, and obviously quite a confronting film. A lot of people who probably aren't that into cinema probably saw it and thought it was a bit wacky, but I really liked some of the ideas that were being played with. And I thought it was quite a timely film. I think a lot of the themes and images in the film, a lot of the motifs, we've seen a lot of other similar films. And I felt that we really needed to do an episode on the theme of, like, trouble in paradise, which is I guess an idiom or a phrase that we're all quite familiar with. And I feel like we've actually been hovering around this issue a lot in recent episodes. When we did the episode on all those Oscar movies a couple of months ago, we talked about Triangle of Sadness and Babylon, and we did touch on The Whale as well, almost like a subversion. But the idea of indulgence and people living the high life and eating the rich and that kind of thing, it's a very good that theme certainly has a trouble in paradise underpinning to it. And again I want to say, sort of, and we're going to structure this week's episode like we did, I think it was last week, in the last couple of weeks we've done this a bit, where rather than going from via each film, we're actually going to do it via symbol or via theme, and sort of talk about how each of the films talk about it, in obviously in the fact that it's universal, that they're all talking about it, but how they talk about it in different ways and sort of pick up where the other ones leave off and things. So just to reiterate, when we've done this sort of thing on the show, when we see that kind of coincidental overlap, we're certainly in the realm of the archetypal and the universal, and I probably don't stress this enough usually, but it's really important to note that, you know, that there is difference in these films, and it's really important, perhaps even more important, that where we see universality, that it's really important that we counter that, we balance that out with the difference that we see. So we know where not only where the universality starts, but perhaps more importantly, where it stops and where things aren't universal, where things do sort of pivot on the individual level. So this week is all about noting the similarities and differences in this realm of living the high life, but things not being what they're cracked up to be, and trying very hard to sort of stick our fingers into the cracks and just enough so, you know, not too much, but just enough that we can pull things apart and see where things differ on the individual level or differ, you know, by film and by culture and society and by artist, but also understanding that these are some universal and archetypal film themes. So the first film we're going to talk about, or one of the films we're going to talk about, is, of course, Michelangelo Antonioni's 1960 classic L'Avventura. We're then also going to talk about a film that I've seen 100 million times. I think it fits really well this week, which is, in terms of quality, one might say the opposite of a film like L'Avventura. But in terms of themes, I think there's a lot of crossover. But Forgetting Sarah Marshall, directed by Nicholas Stoller. And then we're going to, of course, talk about Infinity Pool, directed by Brandon Cronenberg. And in terms of the themes, let's just kick it off. The first one is just the theme of trouble in paradise. It's a very archetypal theme. It's a very familiar theme. Essentially, what we're talking about is situations in which you have relationship troubles. Specifically, it's usually relationship troubles when people say, you know, trouble in paradise, in a, you know, let's say a paradisical or, you know, in just very cheap sense, sort of like a tropical location, you know, an idyllic location, palm trees on beaches, that kind of situation. So in L'Avventura, we you know, it's set in, they're doing some Italian island hopping at the beginning in the Mediterranean on a boat. They're all very good looking young people. And Forgetting Sarah Marshall, we've got Jason Segel and Russell Brand and Kristen Bell and Mila Kunis out there in Hawaii, and then Infinity Pool. It's in this vague kind of fictitious Balkan Mediterranean coastal resort. And underpinning everything we talk about this week is this irony between having it all And not just aesthetically, like not just being in an idyllic world, but all the characters are materially well off as well. Even in a movie like Forgetting Sarah Marshall, on the very bottom level, we've got Peter's character, who he still got a good job in LA, for example. But most of the characters are very rich and famous, so they materially have it all. But despite having it all, they're still having issues, namely relationship issues. And I think just on a basic level this week, that says something about love and human relationships in that they are unsolvable. There's always an element of things are always tense on some level, and there's always a point of soreness. And I think, as I've mentioned a second ago, I think this is a very topical and timely theme. You can't help but think of a show like White Lotus in all these conversations that we're talking about, which has been a huge hit. And not that I've seen all of it, but everyone I know thinks it's the greatest film show of all time. And that's worth mentioning as well, because it very unsurprisingly does make a very obvious reference to La Ventura, I'm told. I haven't seen the film, the show altogether, but when you think about all these things we're talking about this week, I think there's so many more than just these three films, and we know that just from the fact that there's like literal intertextuality in all of them, and there's plenty more bits of intertextuality between some of these, and you certainly feel like Infinity Pool is referencing White Lotus in a lot of ways. I'm sure that was on their minds when they were making the film. So, we've talked about the idea that relationships are unsolvable. There's always trouble despite paradise. Why is that, though? Let's try and dig a little bit deeper. And I think that one of the other recurring themes in all these films is this idea of relationships being riddled with power imbalances, power dynamics, but really emphasizing the lack of balance in all of them. So in La Ventura, in simple terms, we have an older man and a younger woman. Sandro is our protagonist. And he, essentially, if you haven't seen the film, he and a bunch of his other interesting friends and their wives and really go on this boat trip around this rocky area. And eventually his girlfriend, Anna, she goes missing. And she brings along her friend Claudia, and Claudia and Sandro actually very interestingly start a relationship after that. And that's kind of the core plot point of the film. But to begin with Sandro and Anna's relationship, we've got an older man and a younger woman. But she's quite well off. She's an heiress, and that's really important to their relationship and their dynamic. And so then when he moves on to Claudia, it's not only just about an older man with a younger woman. And he's not that much older, by the way. That's not that important. But he's a little bit more sophisticated, a little bit more mature, let's say. She is not an heiress, and she is from a poorer background, and she has blonde hair. So we're starting to see that the power imbalance becomes a little bit more exaggerated, or a little bit more intense, or a little bit more noticeable. And then as the film develops, without giving too much away if you haven't seen the film, but then the next woman that kind of comes along at another point in the film, and not for very long, but I just think it's worth noting, she's also younger, she's also not as well off, she's also less sophisticated. So we start to see this what we might call with modern in the modern lexicon, the modern zeitgeist would use the word intersectionality, which is to say there's many different layers through which power shows itself, and in a relationship, those are all emphasized and become intensified in certain contexts. We see a similar thing in Forgetting Sarah Marshall as well, but it's asking all those same questions, but in a 21st century context. So rather than there being an older man and a younger woman, and that there being a tension there, we have a man and a woman, but in this case we have the frumpy, soft, the 21st century Omega kind of soft man. I'm not sure if I'm using the Omega archetype. I don't know those very well, but he's that classic Apatowian protagonist, who's frumpy, soft, kind of butterball type, who's with a much more attractive, much more successful woman. But we still have a man that has sort of unique accomplishments and unique assets. Peter in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, if you haven't seen that film, he's going out with Kristen Bell, who's this famous TV actor. And she breaks up with him, and he goes off to Hawaii, and the humor comes from the fact that Sarah Marshall, his ex-girlfriend, is also in Hawaii, and then that it plays out, and that the comedy ensues, because isn't that the worst thing in the world, to be on the same island with your ex who just broke up with you? But a lot of the humor comes from the fact that it's not the traditional macho man breaking a young girl's heart, but it's funny because he's big, tall, frumpy guy, is very sensitive, and he's being beaten around by this little tiny blonde bombshell, and that's kind of funny. But then in Infinity Pool, we're taking this to the next level, not just on a dramatic level, but in that 2023 world, where we're saying we still have that same dynamic. It's not even funny anymore to have the man making less money than the woman, or the man not having the money or having less money than the woman. But we're now compounding that by the fact that at least Peter in Forgetting Sarah Marshall is a musician and he has talent. James in this film, who's the Alexander, I think that's the right, Skarsgård, in this film, he's like this wannabe writer. And a big part of his character, so if you haven't seen this film, it's the Skarsgård and his wife are in this hotel resort in the Balkan coastal area, and he meets these two fans, one of them importantly played by Mia Goth, who's a bit of an it girl right now, and he sort of goes around with her and her friends, and his wife is kind of like, well, they're not our friends, let's not hang out with them, and he sort of spirals into this very hedonistic, and we're going to get into a bit more detail in a second, but he kind of abandons his wife while on holiday and kind of gets really into this situation, and there's this interesting system in this country they're in where you can, if you break the law, they can like clone you and like kill one version of you, and then you get to live on as long as you have enough money to pay for it. So it's making there's an interesting comment there about power and what it means to be able to afford to lose an aspect of yourself, let's say. But we're going to go into more of that a little bit more detail in a second. The point I want to make about that one now is that not only do we have a character who is living a luxurious life and that makes us feel a little bit sick that they can do whatever they want with that money, but he hasn't really even earned it. He's not even competent at all. And that's kind of turning the screw a little bit more. It's saying not only do these people, you know, not only do we have something like power, power imbalances in the world, in society, but sometimes they're not even, you know, people exploit that or indulge the power that they have, the privilege that they have, without even having competence to earn that kind of power. And that kind of makes us feel a little bit sick. And in talking about kind of the shortcomings of love and relationships, all of these films, very interesting, this is the third thing we're going to talk about, have this interesting motif of opening and closing, the doors of love opening and closing kind of simultaneously. What I mean by that is that when love ends, love begins elsewhere. And this is something we talked about last week, especially when we talked about One Fine Morning. But in La Ventura, obviously, when Anna goes, Claudia emerges. In Forgetting Sarah Marshall, when he's dumped by Sarah, Pete finds Rachel. And in Infinity Pool, as James becomes more attracted to James, Mia Goth's character, his wife drifts away from him. So last week we talked about that in kind of like a positive way, which is like when a loved one leaves you, at least there's something to turn to. I think with these three films, maybe not so much Forgetting Sarah Marshall, but there's still an inevitable tension there. We're sort of saying that just because love begins after it ends doesn't mean that's a good thing. Sometimes we look for love in the wrong places. Sometimes, and there's an interesting line in Forgetting Sarah Marshall where Rachel says to Pete, she says, you shouldn't be with anyone right now. And I think that is a motif throughout all these films. When love ends, that doesn't necessarily mean that we should find new love. Sometimes we need to take a second just to ask ourselves, well, are we actually in a place to love anyone right now? Do we need to do the work to fix ourselves? Just because love has closed in one part of our life doesn't mean we should necessarily take the next opportunity somewhere else. Maybe love closed for a reason. So let's talk about how that works out on the individual level. Let's pretend we are an individual that's in a situation where love has just closed, or we're in this kind of weird impasse or this weird transitionary period where it seems like opportunities are opening and closing for us everywhere. What does it mean for the individual, on the individual, forgetting the relationship aspect of it for a moment, what does it mean on the level of the individual? So in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, we have the very classic ideal woman, the ideal woman dichotomy that we've talked about many, many times on this show. I think the first time we ever talked about it was when we did Saturday Night and Sunday Morning, and how those, you've got the two archetypal feminine, you've got the one which represents responsibility, the other one represents, having a fun time out with young girls and doing it. And we see that also in Forgetting Sarah Marshall to a degree. So we see this idea that the ideal woman falls between this tension between two opposing types of women. So we've got on one hand the conscientious, meticulous, neat, clean and tidy, sheltered, self-conscious, dare I say, sort of like white suburban girl that, you know, everything's handed to her in the Sarah Marshall character. And then we've got the laid-back, beach-dwelling, go chase your dreams, go with the flow kind of type, who is the Mila Kunis character. It's almost like we've talked about dichotomies before, but you've got the left versus the right, the conservative versus the progressive. You've got kind of like the logistical versus the more recreational on one side. And the idea that the tension for Pete is that they both have pluses and they both have minuses. And so the individual is always split between two pulling forces in a spectrum, particularly in the romantic realm. But in Love and Chura, we sort of take it to the next level. We take it to a more, let's say, like a more complicated or mature artistically complicated level. Because to some extent it's the same. But we see less of a stable side-to-side oscillation. They almost add a dimension. If Forgetting Sarah Marshall is two-dimensional, Love and Terror is three-dimensional. So it is sort of going between the blonde and the brunette kind of thing. But we're also going in another direction as we do that. It's almost like we're going side-to-side but also downward at the same time. Almost like a spiral. There's almost like a Fibonacci thing going on here where we swing from one another, but every time we do, the one's claim to nobility, one's claim to virtuosity or virtuousness is kind of eroded a little bit every time. So we start with Anna, and she has this sort of sophisticated background, and also she's a brunette, which is, you know, in traditional sense, that's poor in a traditional sense. But then we have Claudia, who is from, and he swings back to, she's the blonde, she's from a poorer background, so swing into the other side. And then as the film progresses and he starts to look elsewhere, Sandra starts to look elsewhere again, we still go back to a brunette, but this time it's a little bit, I don't want to give too much away because it's important, but again, he swings back the other way, but it's a downward swing at the same time. He's swinging back, but it's also going, the pendulum's also moving down as it swings as well. It's not a perfect swing, and we keep seeing the traces of each one in the other, and not always the right aspects, or not always the good aspects, or the ones that a person should be pursuing. And I think there's an interesting moment in this film where Claudia puts on a wig, and she sort of shows that this sort of this interchangeableness, or, you know, the symbolism of a wig, what one can just change their image, change their general flavor or their tone in a single moment, and can come on and off. You can turn that on and off. It's almost like through this male gaze, we see this element of replaceability in our companions, a dispensableness as well. And then in Infinity Pool as well, and it's probably the one we should focus on the most on this conversation, in the thing about the iterations of the individual theme, is that as we sort of mentioned before, the other characters, you know, if they have enough money, they're allowed to clone themselves and have themselves killed and then go on living as if they did nothing wrong. The characters are granted, because they're so rich, they're granted endless opportunity to embrace hedonism. So the film, in a very crude sense, we could say, is a film that asks the question, well, what would happen if you had the opportunity to just embrace hedonism without there being a cost, if there's literally no cost, because they're so rich they can pay for it. And this is probably the main point about this film, which is why I loved it so much, is because using the beauty of cinematic metaphor, we see that what happens when you do that is you lose a part, or you lose a version of yourself every time. You lose an iteration of the self every time. And they keep giving urns, like the ashes of that self that died. They get urns of it. And, you know, there's so many interesting scenes to talk about, but there's one in particular where, you know, this big gang, Alexander Skarsgård, has to beat up his own, there's like the dog version of himself. I like train this version to be a dog. And in just that one example, it's like he has to learn how to kill the animalistic iteration of who he is. But the point I'm trying to make is that we gradually chip away at ourselves and discard parts of ourselves, which leaves us with less dimensions every time. We whittle ourselves down when we pursue endless hedonism. So, is there a realm in which we can see this path or this cycle to self-erosion, does that reveal itself on any specific realm, in any specific realm? And I think all of these films explore sexuality or the erotic realm in really interesting ways. So in La Ventura, and this is probably the main point I want to make about La Ventura and what I particularly find interesting about this film is that to me, and you can say, this film is about a lot of things, but to me what's particularly interesting about this film is that it is an exploration of, it's a very good exploration of human attraction, particularly through the male gaze, or the male heterosexual gaze. So the backdrop of this film is that we have, you know, these young, beautiful Italians, you know, in bikinis floating around the Mediterranean, right? That's our opening scene of this film, or the opening sequence of this film. But one gets lost, which enlivens the central complication for our protagonist, Sandro. In essence, the film becomes about when to give up on love. Now, it does that both with respect to temporality, so the concept of time, and asks questions like, when is love lost? When is love to be sought elsewhere? But also asks that question, or explores the idea of when to give up on love in terms of substance as much as it is about temporality. So for whom should we give up love? And perhaps more importantly, for whom should we not give up love? And these are questions that all apply to the other films and any other films or television shows that fall into this trouble in paradise scenario. So what the film does so cleverly is that it traverses the spectrum of human attraction. So we've, as I said, there's this backdrop of Italian actresses in bikinis on a boat in the Mediterranean in 1960 in this black and white film, and he's asking broader questions about the nobility of love. So while we're seeing these real life actresses doing this sort of, you know, jumping around on this boat and there's the music playing, but there's also this very dramatic aspect to this film, we as viewers are asking ourselves, well, on what level are we noble in who we are attracted to, or when we find ourselves aroused? So on one end, we have literal celebrities playing these parts, but there's actually like a celebrity character in the film. It's one I keep hinting at, but I don't want to give it away if you haven't seen the film. But like this model / sex worker celebrity girl in this film, and that lifts up this idea of, you know, the male gaze on a very superficial level. And we also have the famous scene where Claudia is walking around and all the men are leering at her in that Italian street. And that's actually the scene that is that's referenced in White Lotus. But then on the other end of the spectrum, we have that interesting scene where we have the nude artist. So we're in the realm of nudity. We're talking about nudity, but because it's in the realm of art, so I shouldn't say the realm of nudity, but we're talking about nudity, but in the realm of art, that's okay. And it's sort of saying things like, well, it's not, sex isn't always dirty. Sex can be artistic. Sex can be beautiful. So we're asking questions about, what is actually valid or substantive attraction? If we depart from one love for another, when are we doing that in a noble way? Are we just giving up on, are we doing it in a mature way? Are we experiencing self-development when we do that? Or are we discarding something that should be worked on? Are we discarding something that's our true love that might take sweat and effort and blood and tears? Are we just discarding all those things that require hard work for something that's easy and more superficial, but in the end leaves us in a pool of tears, let's say? And similarly, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, you know, it's a raunchy 2000s comedy. So we've got a lot of discussions about sex and conveyances of sex and sexual behavior. And there's that great dinner scene where, in the same way that Sarah and Rachel oppose one another, as I mentioned, as a sort of perfect opposites, as I mentioned a second ago, so too do Peter and Russell Brand's character oppose each other, in the sense that, you know, Pete, the Jason Segel character, is a, you know, that soft kind of I want to get to know you type before he sleeps with you kind of guy. And then you've got Russell Brand, who's a very sexual guy. And then in Infinity Pool, as we've already talked about, there's many explorations of sex, but mainly in the realm of sexual hedonism, and seeing that things get very, you know, that sex is extremely potent, but can also lead to this trap of eroding one's self. But in talking about all that, I also want to focus specifically on how nudity is dealt with in all of these films specifically. So in Infinity Pool, we have some very confronting shots of sexual organs. And I think it's in a way, it's like in a very Ari Aster kind of way, we're unveiling the very confronting elements of hedonism, specifically sexual hedonism. And we're sort of looking behind the veil of luxurious hedonism. And that's kind of well depicted in the use of masks in this film. It's got a very Eyes Wide Shutty kind of vibe to it. Also reminded me a lot of Babylon. But in La Ventura, there is no nudity of the actual women. And I don't think that's I think that's actually quite significant, given that the film does explore these deep themes about the male gaze and the male libido and constantly chasing women in all their different forms on this sort of downward spiral kind of way. As an audience member, there's almost like this yearning for nudity and seeing these women jumping around the boat in their bikinis, and there's actually a scene where they take their clothes off, but the camera very strategically is not showing their sexual parts, almost to practice what it preaches in a way, to sort of say that, and also because we've got that scene about the artist with the nude, the nude pictures, it's kind of practicing what it preaches and saying, like, well, nudity is only noble, it should only be practiced in the artistic world when the subject is in a state of, is dignified in a way, can be depicted as an artistic creation. So it doesn't just treat the beautiful women in this film as just sort of these objects of, the male gaze, but rather asks the audience questions about, you know, to what extent are you willing to withgo that sort of thing to concentrate on the deeper elements of what's in front of you? And in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, very famously, we see Jason Segel get naked a couple of times in this film, and it works as, like, on a very basic level, a means of signifying his vulnerability. But it's also this really beautiful motif for bookending the film, where if you've seen the film, you know, Kristen Bell's character doesn't give him a hug at the beginning when he's naked and he asks her to, and then at the end Mila Kunis does, so as to say that, you know, love is about embracing the person in their most vulnerable state, you know, in their warts and all. And it lifts up this idea of the tension between vulnerability and dignity. And there's actually a quote in the film where Kristen Bell says something like, when she wants to, she's talking about becoming a feature, a film actor, she says that, you know, seemingly the actresses are only the ones that show their cuda, the ones that have, the ones that make and forgive me for wanting to have dignity. And just on this topic of nudity, because I think this is almost like the gateway to the answers for this week, is that we see this really, it has to be intertextuality at play, but we see the same image of a man suckling on a woman's nipple in both La Ventura and Infinity Pool. And it may just be a simple nod or a reference, but at its core, I think both films are ultimately depicting the interplay between companionship and sexuality, where romantic relationships have this strange combination of both being about deep friendship, loyalty, commitment, love, compassion, and kindness, but also sexuality, carnal behavior, animalistic expression, like mindless physical activities, which you can't help but think that things are bound to get messy, right? There's bound to be trouble in that paradise. Dare I say, things are bound to get bloody when we're in the realm of the romantic, in the realm of the sexual. So to wrap things together, right, at the start of this episode, we talked about how nothing ever guarantees paradise when we're in the romantic realm. And we can see why this is, because when we look at interpersonal relationships, they are littered with power imbalances. But in losing love, we can always gain it, but that isn't necessarily a good thing, particularly when we think about how easily we can indulge the carnal and lead to this place of eroding the self. So maybe when we think about sexuality, we need to understand it as troublesome and messy business. Yeah, and it can erode the self. But there is there is a broad spectrum of sexual behaviors. Let's not get too scared of things, right? There's a broad spectrum of sexual behaviors that traverses from the superficial and the crude, but also to the artistic and the noble. So perhaps in respecting this, we need to accept the troubles of being vulnerable in enjoying the paradise that is dignity. Well, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for this week on Sacred Cinema. I've been your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you again next week. Bye.